This episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Summit, 343's live educational networking event for coaches and members of the ambitious soccer community. The Summit will be taking place at the Palms Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, July 29th through 31st, 2016. Please visit 343coaching.fm for more information. Thank you. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 343 podcast. I am your host, John Pronich. Now, previously we've talked with U.S. Youth National Team standout Kyle Gruno, who's currently navigating his way through the youth system over at Leicester City FC in England, and that is during one of the most exciting times in their club history. At this time, they sit 5 points clear on top of the Premier League table. Very, very exciting. Kyle gave us some insight from a player's perspective. He told us what the day-to-day life of an aspiring professional footballer is like. He gave us a chance to see through the lens of a young man chasing his dream. Now, we'd like to provide you with another unique point of view, a point of view that probably a lot of you, many of you, can relate to, a point of view that honestly is not talked about very often. We want to provide you with a father's point of view. We want you to hear what it's like to be a father of a promising young footballer. We want you to hear about the sacrifice and the joy that comes from setting your sights on top-flight European football, and in this case, what it's like to make it there as a family. Enter Mark Pulisic. Mark is the father of Christian Pulisic, the 17-year-old American boy who cracked the Borussia Dortmund first-team lineup earlier this season. But that wasn't necessarily the focus of the chat with Mark. The focus was more on the process of getting Christian to where he is now. Where did it all begin? Where was the first contact with the national team? How was he first discovered by Dortmund? What about an agent? What about school? The language? And looking back after all this is said and done, what would you have done differently as a father? Those are just some of the questions and the topics that I touched on with Mark. You'll also hear him talk about his role as a youth coach in Germany and his time as a professional major league indoor soccer player here in the United States. Now, one moment I'd like to highlight from this conversation was Mark and his wife's and his family's desire to include Christian, a young boy, in all of the important discussions and decisions that ultimately led to the Pulisic family where they are today. We hope you enjoy this podcast with Mark Pulisic. And for more podcasts like this, plus additional information from 343, please visit www.343coaching.fm. Once again, that is www.343coaching.fm. Thank you. All right, special guest on today's episode is Mark Pulisic, father of Christian Pulisic, who is now at Borussia Dortmund in Germany. Mark, thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome, no problem.
All right, we'll get into some of the details throughout the conversation, I'm sure, but just real quick, a story about yourself and what you're up to and where you're at these days, how you got there. I guess that's already getting too much into the details. Quick story about yourself. How about that? Start there.
Well, I'm here in Dortmund, and I actually do some training for the youth for Dortmund. So it's been my life coaching. So I'm already in diving deep into helping the little young German players here at Borussia Dortmund. It's been fun. It's been fun. I help coach a U10 team, and I also do a lot of individual and small group training in the football knot, which is a building here in Dortmund that's a pretty amazing tackle tool for the young players. So, I'm enjoying it. It's been a year and a half, I've been living here with my son. It's just me, and my wife and daughter are back in the States.
And maybe let's talk a little bit about, I know that you have a soccer background as well, so what's your soccer history like?
I played back in the old days when indoor soccer was before the MLS really came out. The MLS it out, played in Hartford professionally for 8 years, and played George Mason University collegiately, where I met my wife, who was also a player there. I've been involved in the game, coaching since then, and doing a lot of traveling with my son and So it's been part of my life, always.
And so you met your wife at George Mason. Where did you guys start your family? Where's Christian from? Where was he born?
Hershey, Pennsylvania. You know, when he was born, actually, my daughter and Christian were born 17 months apart, and my daughter's older, and Christian, they were born in Hershey, Pennsylvania, where we still own the same home that we brought him back to when he was born. So, Pennsylvania, which is, you know, it's about an hour, or an hour and 15 minutes west of Philly.
Okay. And I'm assuming that's where Christian got his start of playing soccer. What's your first memory of Christian with a soccer ball, or, you know, getting his start with the sport?
Yeah, you know, we tried all the different sports. He was 5 years old and put him in kiddie kickers, you know, little 3v3, five-year-olds running around. He wasn't really interested then. He was more interested in going around looking at all the people watching and yelling. And then local rec program. And then just moved into really enjoying it and excelling. And, you know, then at age seven, we moved to England for a year. My wife was on a teacher exchange. Got a pretty big bug there, played on a U18, did really well, and, you know, played every day after school in the playground with the kids in England. And then from England, we actually moved to Detroit when he was 9, 10, 11, 3 years there. I was coaching the MISL. He played a bit for the Michigan Rush, which is a club. Well, it's nationwide, the Rush, but we played obviously in Michigan and outside of Detroit. And from then, after that, we came back to Hershey. And at this time, he was 12. I'm going quickly through the dates and years here. And then Pennsylvania Classic, he's been his club since then. And that's where I was also working. And yeah, so he's moved around a bit. As you can see.
at what point was it in Pennsylvania? Was it in England? Was it in Michigan? At what point did you notice that he was starting to excel?
Pretty much. It's right away. I mean, it's 6 years, 7 years old. You know, he was an athlete, so that was kind of, you know, what was given to him, you know, his athleticism, and then, you know, the psychological part of it, of him loving it and wanting to watch it all the time, it came very quickly after that. 7, 8 years old, was watching games all the time, and it just kind of, I knew at some point, we were in England, he was seven and a half. He just wanted to watch games and really wanted to play every day. And so at that age, you know, even that young age, you see already the bug starting to creep into him. And not only him wanting it, but he was also gifted with a lot of natural talent as well.
And as a father, did you, once you realize that, you know, this was going to be something a little bit more for him than just recreational soccer, did you begin to do anything differently in the way that you approach teaching him the game or talking to him about the game or harboring his love for the game?
Yeah, it wasn't like a lot of these idiot parents now that scream at their kids all the time, you know, and bring them a car after a game and destroy their confidence, you know. I was coaching them all the time, and I pretty much just made sure he enjoyed it, you know. But if he played poorly or he didn't work that hard, or he was, you know, I just made a decision at an early age to let the game be about him and not about me. It was a very good decision. And I look back on it now, and it was probably the best thing I ever did was just leaving him alone and letting him thrive and give him himself his own doses of how much soccer he wanted. and not be forced to doses on them, you know. And that to me is critical. And that was why I still believe to this day he just loves to go out and juggle a ball and be around a ball. You know, it's because it's on his terms, not mine.
And I know a lot of people, we received a lot of questions submitted via Twitter, and a lot of people are wondering what, if anything, was Christian doing that was different than other kids? And I think they're hinting at what, how much was he training away from the field? Was it an everyday thing? Did he have a ball glued to his foot, or was he just that naturally talented?
Well, it wasn't every day. I mean, there were a lot of days I wanted to get away from the game, where I would throw a football around with him. We'd go play basketball a lot. You know, he loves basketball. Because I wanted to give him the opportunity to, him being an athlete, I wanted him to understand that there's other choices, you know, that he can make. We spent a lot of time playing other sports. You know, I remember for days we were hooked on throwing a baseball back and forth, you know, when he was younger. We're playing, going to gym, playing basketball. So, and he always went back to the ball with his feet and wanted to juggle and break his juggling record. And I would encourage him. Don't get me wrong, I didn't discourage him from doing that a lot. But it seemed like he always wanted to go back to soccer, you know. And he just started to recognize how good he was, you know, and it felt good.
And I'm really curious about. I actually don't know either. When Christian became part of the U.S. youth national team picture, what age was that, and how did that kind of first interaction with U.S. soccer take place?
I won't forget it ever. He was playing U14 for PA Classics. I think he was only 12. He was only 12 at the time. He was playing 2 years up. And we were at it was like one of the first years of U14 was starting, U.S. Developmental Academy. And Tab Ramos was coaching NJSA, a New Jersey team. And he just happened to walk by the field, Tab Ramos, and spotted Christian. And after the game, he's like, well, who's this kid? And not be the coach. So I said, that's my son. And then he called Manny Shelfshine at the time, who was the U14 national team coach. Some people think we were forcing this, and we called, and it was a natural thing like anything else. You know, he was spotted at a developmental academy event, and then he was called in as a 12-year-old, I believe, to the U14s just to kind of get a taste of it. And that's where it all started, with the national team.
And maybe for people that don't know what it's like to be part of that picture for a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 17-year-old, what are the requirements of a player like Christian when he gets called into a camp? Like, how much notice do you guys have as a family? What are the burdens that get put on you as far as travel and his schooling and things like that? Can you paint the picture for us of what it's like for a child to get called into camp?
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything else. You know, you're excited and you got to contact the school, and you might have, you know, they always tried at the younger ages to do the camps around holidays, you know, whether it's Easter vacations or things like that. But there was a lot of missed school, you know, and that's when he also started to have to understand the importance of sacrifice. You know, he'd have to come back and do extra work, you're given a few weeks notice, and the flights are booked for you, and there's a lot of excitement. But again, you have to really be prepared to not live really the normal kid life, you know. Not that Christian has ever, anyway, yet. So, but it's different. But like I said, you know, at the younger ages, you do try to keep the kids and not missing as much school.
Yeah. And then, so this is age 12
I think, because the time frame we're kind of in right now, where he's been seen by U.S. Soccer. He's now been called into a youth national team camp. What were the next steps for him? Did he stay with the same club? Did you guys start to seek out other opportunities? What were the next couple of years like?
No, at that point he was with the Pennsylvania Classics, and I was also employed. I was working, I was coaching and helping direct the club with Steve Klein, who's the director there, and we stayed there. I mean, it was a good club. It would be, yeah. I mean, it wasn't an MLS academy, but you know, there was a good environment there. There were good players there, and he was having fun. You know, and I didn't want to put him in a car and drop him to a bigger club, or, you know, because I just always focused on his enjoyment of the game. So we did stay at PA Classics up until until we came here.
And when did that take place? 16?
At 15. He was really with the U-17s. He was with the U-14s and 15s and 17s. In the first year of the 17s, he had a good year, and he went to a few tournaments. And that's really where Dortmund scouted him. I think one was in Turkey, the Asian Cup. And then there was really a lot of interest from other clubs. But Dortmund was a big club, and we were invited to go take a look. Really enjoyed the atmosphere and the environment and the coaches and just everything out. Borussia Dortmund was comforting to Christian, you know, and he then at that point he knew he wanted to go to Europe and play. So, you know, that's it in a nutshell. I mean, obviously there's a lot of discussions that go on before you make that final decision to move, but. You know, we knew, and Christian knew when he started playing with the national team that he really wanted to try and push himself and up against the best players in the world and push himself in direction towards playing in Europe. And that was just something he wanted to do and worked hard to be given the opportunity. And then once he got here, another level he had to move into.
And what part of the process, so you said that it was kind of like a tournament in Turkey, is that what you said? Did I have that right?
At
what point of this youth career that he's had, does something like an agent come into the picture? Or a representative?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you have to, I didn't want to get involved in any of the administrative parts, and to be frank, I didn't know all the rules, you know. So for me, you know, it was through a friend who knew someone, and someone I trusted and met a few times, and just hit it off, and really trusted this person to help us start the process. And that was a great move. You know, we're very happy that we have someone that helps us and represents Christian, and is like more of a family member than anything else right now. So that's important to us, is that we can trust someone. But you definitely need someone helping in that regard.
And aside from the struggles of actually having to physically move to a new country or a new city, new country, everywhere. What was the process like for Christian to obtain like a visa to be working in Dortmund? And how important is that for people to understand, I guess, too?
He needed to be enrolled in school, which is a German law. You know, you have to be, kid has to be enrolled in school. I have to have work, which I was given an opportunity to work. And, you know, he needed a residence card, you know, permitting him to stay here, that run year to year. But that, all the process was done. We were both here officially right away. We took care of all the paperwork, but his, you know, after 6 months, he was given the opportunity to obtain a Croatian passport. So then he's officially, and myself, are European Union citizens. So now we're really official here in Germany because, you know, obviously working and everything else is easier once you obtain a European citizenship. You don't have to worry about, you know, any working permits or visas or things like that.
I want to, I guess, backtrack one step, and once Christian was in the national team program, you guys were still in Pennsylvania, obviously looking for opportunities to get Christian to the highest level of the game. What drew you guys specifically, I guess, to Europe and not staying in the United States? Or what were you guys looking for that you weren't finding where you were at?
I mean, I think if you really want to excel and you have someone who's really wants to excel, and as not only a father, as someone who's been around the game too, I see a young boy who has fallen in love with the game to a degree where it's, you know, his love for the game combined with his natural abilities and athletic abilities, we felt putting him into a culture, okay, of football, okay, would help his development. And in Europe, especially Germany, not that other countries in Europe aren't all about soccer, but he would be able to soak up an environment, you know, and that's what attracted us about Dortmund, because Dortmund is football. You know, the city is just yellow and black. So, you know, everyone's always asked me, well, what's the training tools and what do they do different? Do the kids train more? Do they do this? Do they do that? Are the coaches better? Blah, blah, blah. Why is it so much better there? There's no special training. There's no special coaches. The coaches aren't necessarily better qualified or more technicians or understand the game more. Or it's basically the culture, you know. It's what the kids only know. They only know their favorite players on the weekend that are going to play, and they're going to go to the game. They're going to watch the game. If they're not going to go to the game, they're going to make sure they're sitting in front of the TV with their parents, and that's what they're waiting for. And that's all they want to be. And when they train, even the 9-10-year-olds, that's what they're training to become. They're training to become players of the Borussia Dortmund first team. Okay, and there's a lot less distractions in their lives, you know, that are affecting them. And that's, fortunately, in America, you know, there's a very many distractions for these kids to ultimately reach a high level of football, I mean soccer. So, you know, to me, it's the culture. You know, you can't replicate the culture in America like you can here, okay, of living and breathing the sport. So, and I don't think you ever will. You know, there's just too much there. There's too many games, too many sports, too many things on the TV, and you know, that kind of takes the focus away from ultimately what a lot of these kids want. So I know it sounded jumbled there, but I hope you kind of get the meat of what I'm trying to say. You know, I helped coach a U10 team, every one of my players, they're 9 years old, every one of the players, okay, if you name the team in Spain, Malaga, or one of the first divisions in Italy, and ask my 9-year-old to name 3 of their players, they would be able to rattle it off, no problem. It's just ingrained in their heart, in their blood, and that's what they want.
And when you guys had made the decision to make the move to Germany and get Christian with Dortmund, did you have any doubts in your mind at that time? Or do you know if Christian had any doubts in his mind at that time?
I'm sorry, when we moved here, did you have any doubts?
During the process, was there ever like a moment of like, what the fuck am I doing? Like,
Maybe not so much before, but when we got here, there were tough times. Yeah, there were. You know, the first 3-4 months were very, very difficult. Very difficult for Christian to adapt to the schooling, not knowing any of the language, being thrown right into a German high school. And, you know, that in itself was a very humbling experience for him. And he really had to step back and say, you know, is this really what I want? And we had a lot of discussions about it. And for his sake, you know, for credit to him, he stuck it out. I told him, look, you have 6 months. Let's go into 6 months here, and then we'll see how we'll get through the holidays, you know. And because we started in July. And the first part was difficult, you know. And some training sessions, the coaches were very I'm not going to say upset, but concerned, you know, with how he was playing. And it's a major adjustment period, you know. I mean, these kids, you see why a lot of players come over and struggle, you know, and they don't make it, or they want to go back to the MLS, or they want to go back home, or, you know, it is not easy, you know, and I lived it, and, you know, everyone... You know, we joke all the time, Christian and I, like, oh, people think you have the best life. And okay, but there's sacrifices and tough times, you know. It's not all rosy, you know. He's getting kicked up and down that field because these kids don't want him to be better than them, you know, because they're fighting for contracts the next year. So there was a major adjustment period. But once he got over that hump and he started to feel comfortable with the language, and coaches started to feel comfortable with him. He had one or two, you know, very strong games. I just remember there was one or two weeks where I saw him go over the hump and said, now he's showing that what he can do.
And what, I mean, I can, for reference for people, Mark and I are FaceTiming right now, so I can see his reaction when I ask some of these questions. I can see the reaction on his face. But what was that like for you as a father to see Christian going through that? And like you said, getting kicked up and down the field and seeing him compete against these other players that are really in it for, they have to secure their contract next year. What was that like for you as a father?
He's playing U17. These players... You know, once you're U19, you're trying to earn a professional contract, or you're going to be moving on to another club. You know, so yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, there's nights up there. I remember one night, I'm watching the training session, and it's, oh my God, it was Fahrenheit wise. It had to be 0 degrees, and the wind, and the hail is running across the field, and it's brutally cold, the fields covered with snow, and these having a full field scrimmage, and Christian's going with the ball, and guys are sliding, and I just remember, like, oh my God, if he gets out of here alive, you know, just between the conditions and the competitiveness, you know, this is going to be a great learning tool that you can't get anywhere, you know. So yeah, I was concerned at times, you know, but then I just knew that he was a smart kid, and he'd find his way, you know. And you know, as a parent, I think you're always concerned. I'm still concerned. You That's what a parent does, you know. But he's grown to be smart, you know, and he handles himself in a professional manner even at such a young age. He knows how difficult it's going to be, and he knows that these kids want to be better than him, you know. So it's pretty much every day, if you're not on your A game, you know, you're going to be sitting on a bench or you're going to be sent home.
And like I mentioned earlier, we did have some questions come in from Twitter, and I wanted to make sure I asked a couple of these. This one comes from Anthony Zorich on Twitter, and he asked, were there any specific decisions that you as parents had to make which ultimately helped Christian's career? Can you think of like one thing that you and your family did that have kind of brought you guys or influenced the way that you guys have gotten till today?
Yes. We always used to include him in all our pretty important discussions, even at such a young age, you know. So my wife and I would discuss something, and then we'd bring Christian in and really let him have his say, you know, whether it was going to another national team event, did he want to take some time off, did he want to look into going to Europe and look at leaving high school and then the whole residency thing, you know, going to residency, you know, there were a lot of big decisions that had to be made. And I think an answer to his question is making sure that we didn't make the decisions without his input and him understanding everything that would surround that decision.
Great. That's actually great insight. And then one more from Twitter. This comes from Midfield Maestro or at Boss Wolverine. Outside of coaches, who has had the most influence in Christian's journey?
Oh gosh, outside of coaches.
Which I guess that technically classifies you as out too, because you were his coach at one point.
I'm out. Yeah, I coached him his whole life. It was tough giving him up when we came here. Biggest influence. Oh, man. You got me there. I mean, I'm going to have to say, you know, soccer, you know, football-wise, you know, he was a big Luis Figo fan when he was really young. I mean, Figo played for Real Madrid. He always thought it was cool because that's his nickname, and it still is to this day. I call him Figo. So, you know, it's just little things like that make him feel good that he wants, you know, one day he can be a pro.
Yeah, and then just a couple, I guess, last questions, and I'm totally ripping this one off from a podcast that I listen to regularly. But Tim Ferriss always asks his guests if they could put a billboard anywhere and put anything on it, where would they put it and what would they put on it? But assuming that you could put a billboard where every soccer parent in the United States would see it, what would your message to them be?
enjoy your friendships and have fun. And that's what I tell my son. Yeah, before every game, still have fun. Okay. And then on the bottom of the billboard, especially the younger parents, don't be angry with your son's play ever. Just put your arm around them, okay, and ask them if they've had fun.
All right.
Because anger is a killer for the kid. Absolute killer.
Do you think
I don't know how that would all look on a billboard?
bunch of scattered thoughts right there.
Yeah, I guess.
I thought about this, and we talk about the culture and how it's different in Germany. How do you think that would translate to German parents? Would that fly with them? How would the culture receive a message like that there?
It's different here. Here, it's, you know, the parents aren't allowed really to be so involved in the clubs and decisions and things like that. So it's not, you know, the parents are already allowing the kids to, at young ages, to experience the game themselves, you know, and they're not so what do they call them, helicopter parents who are on top of their kids all the time, you know. They allow the coaches to coach, they allow the coaches to make decisions, and the parents live with them. Are there overbearing parents? Are there parents who, I'm sure there are. I haven't come into contact with many parents who I feel suck the love of the game out of their kids. I haven't really noticed that because I just see these kids just breathing and living it, you know. So would a message like that be received here? I think these parents here understand the importance of giving their kids space to learn and to grow.
And thinking back now through Christian's childhood and your daughter's childhood and the decisions you guys have made to move not just once but multiple times, and for Christian to travel, and for you guys to now be in Germany full time, and all the decisions that you've had to make as far as agents and tournaments and all those things go, looking back through all that, is there anything in your mind that stands out that you would like to go back and have done differently?
On a personal level, my daughter suffered a bit, you know. I think I would have acted a little differently and been a little bit more involved in her life. Unfortunately, you know, you lose those times, but we're working on that, and you know, I can regain that, so... but yeah, you know, you spend so much time with the child, and no matter how much you say you're trying to even things out, you know, it's difficult too. So, you know, that's something I think I would really think about doing a little bit differently.
All right. Any last words for the listeners? Last bits of advice or info on your family or Christian?
No, it's been great. You know, he's, you know, proud of what he's done, and it's all a journey still. He's a young boy, and he's got a lot to learn, and he's in a great environment here, and we're happy that he's able to continue to grow and learn here. It's a good club.
Well, thank you so much for being generous with your time, Mark. We really appreciate it. We will be keeping a very close eye on Christian and his development and his time with the 17s and the first team, right? Is that where he's at,
yeah,
I guess, now, or?
Yeah, he's training. Yeah, he's full-time with the first team.
Okay.
He's on their roster, and you know, he's gotten some great time with them, and the coaches are very, very happy with him. Now the whole team is healthy, so the young guns have to kind of step aside and don't get as much time anymore, but you know, he took advantage of some times a month ago when there were a lot of injuries, and he was able to get time on. But as a 17-year-old, you still going from U17 to first league Bundesliga is a massive jump. So we're very happy so far that he's taken his opportunities. And you know, when he's not on the roster with the first team, he plays with the U19s in their league games, and so. They want to make sure he's getting full games. So if they feel he's not going to get much time, they'll rather not roster him and let him play with the 19s so he still continues to develop. So they have a great plan, and we're very confident in their plan.
I actually have one last question. And I know it. Maybe this is different for you because you mentioned that you are working with the 9-year-olds in the club, but what is the communication like, because Christian is still 17, from the first team coaching staff? Does it go directly to him? Are you still involved in the picture? What's that communication channel like?
No, it's all Christian. And okay. It's driving me crazy. Now he's unfortunately got to grow up fast. He's got a full time job now. He's dealing directly with them, and now of course, if there's anything, I still have to. I had to sign. The funny story is, I had to sign a paper before he played in the first Bundesliga game because he wasn't 18 yet. So I literally had to give a parent signature for him to play in the game again. When he first dressed against Borussia Mönchengladbach. So, there's still things they understand. You know, he's living with me. But day-to-day things, you know, as far as medical stuff he's dealing with it directly.
That's awesome. And like I said, we have our eyes on him and wishing him and you and your family all the best from over here on this side of the sea.
Okay, great. It was nice talking to you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, take care.
Thank you for listening to today's episode with Mark Pulisic. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And if you did, and you're looking for more episodes like this one, maybe a conversation with former U.S. national team coach Hugo Perez, or former senior national team player Eric Winalda, or Tom Beyer, or Kyle Gruno, tons of other episodes available on 343coaching.fm. That's the number 3, number 4, the number 3, coaching.fm. And one more tab I want to tell you guys about on that website. If you navigate to the top right corner and hover over the button called Live Services, you'll see two more options pop up below it: Player Camps and Coaching Conference. If you're interested in more information about either of those, please fill out the mailing list forms and you will get all of the information as it is released. Be the first one to know about these things. These will sell out this year. It is very, very crucial that you are on top of it when we release all that information. Okay, with that, we will see you guys again in the near future. I hope that you guys enjoyed the episode today, and talk to you soon. All right, bye. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Summit, 343's live educational networking event for coaches and members of the ambitious soccer community. The summit will be taking place at the Palms Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, July 29th through 31st, 2016. Please visit 343coaching.fm for more information. Thank you.